So, just a few thoughts as this way I just seed some ideas for your practice. And even most of you, I think all of you have a lot of experience, so I trust that you just kind of get on with what works for you. So I was sort of talking about non-desire, paying attention with non-desire. So, like, let's see, I'm in where I'm having breakfast, and then I look at the furniture, and I like to make furniture. How do you do that? How'd they make that? Ooh, that was an interesting joint. What kind of wood is that? So I'm paying attention out of curiosity. There's nothing wrong with that. Curiosity is a good thing. But what I'm doing is I'm concerned about the object. So I'm interested in the object. And so much of our life is like that. And then maybe like last week I was maybe annoyed at someone, not me, of course. someone's doing something and my mind keeps noticing that someone's doing something, and then it keeps knowing that someone's doing something, and that's called annoyance. And my mind keeps going there. That's preoccupation. So I'm preoccupied with the object again. Or something interesting, travel, or something interesting comes up, and I keep pondering how it would be good to have that, or be nice to do that. So the mind's again with desire, it's interested in something and then keeps being preoccupied. So much of our attention is preoccupied with objects. Objects being emotions, sights, sounds, tastes, bodily feelings, and so on. So what the Buddha's suggesting is that is a necessary part of our life, but is there a dimension where we're not so much concerned about the objects, but we're concerned about the very sense of awareness? We're interested in that. So the analogy I was using, I keep trying to look for analogies, but last week's analogy was, you have a vase of flowers, and all of us are concerned about the vase and the water. So if the water gets old and starts to stink, we change it, we take out the old flowers. So much of our concern is about the flowers. But every now and then, we notice that the flowers, in order to exist on the shrine, need a vase. And so the vase is symbolic of awareness itself. Without awareness, you won't have the flowers. So I'm all for beauty. I'm all for rearranging the flowers. And if the water starts to stink, I'll try to get it changed. So without dismissing that part, what about the vase? What about awareness? What about consciousness itself? What's that about? And that's not something that you can find as an object, because it's not an object. But it's something that you can be if you allow that kind of curiosity to function. And that curiosity is more about the awareness than the object. All right? Does that kind of make sense? The book, right? We rarely look at that page. We look at this page, and you see all the writing. But then the white, you don't notice the white, the space. In this room, you have people, color, breeze, sound. So that's where our attention is drawn. It's drawn to objects. But the very space, what do you have to do to notice that? You have to withdraw your attention from any particular object and relax the mind in their space. It's a much more subtle kind of thing. I think artists kind of get that one. We have a composer staying at the monastery, and he says, his mind goes to space very easily because he's considering sound, but also the space around sound. So to enter into that kind of inquiry, what I do, and I would suggest that this inquiry is where we come to the unconditioned, the uncreated, the unoriginated, the unborn, because all the sense objects that we experience are created and born. They begin and they end. They begin and they end. They decay. They come and they go. They're beautiful. They're ugly. We like them. We dislike them. But awareness itself, does that come and go? Like, are you ever absent? Even in your daydreams, is there ever a point where you, where some consciousness isn't existing? To me, I you could say maybe deep sleep, but all you really know is there's no memory. That's all you really know. So, is like, first of all, I always suggest, is your pathway simply one of constantly rearranging the objects of life? That's important. But is there all or another dimension where you now find a way to be with all objects as they are and begin to abide as awareness of change? And that's the pathway I think the Buddha suggests for transcendence or liberation or realizing Nibbana or whatever we want to call it. And that's hard to do because we're so conditioned by the patterns of attraction and repulsion. And also sometimes we just have a lot of heavy stuff that comes into our minds, which is really hard to bear with non-desire. So if I've if I've got my diagnosis of cancer and it's terminal and so on, even though I could say, oh, non-desire, ooh, I don't want this. I don't want this experience of dying or pain or whatever. And so we have to see, oh, how can I be with this difficulty in non-desire? Or with some habit of fear or some habit of anger? That's very hard to do. So what I try to do is I try to bring my attention to very simple, neutral things and train the mind to be aware of change and abide in that sense of the object isn't important, it's the awareness that's important. Try to train where it's not threatening, where it's not complicated, where it's not difficult. And my sense of it is if I do that in the neutral and the undemanding or uncomplicated, then that sensitivity becomes a part of the way I will respond to some of the complexities of my life. So if I've if I've just learned to just be with the feeling of the breeze on my back, it's this way, and just allow awareness to know that, and non-desire, it's just like that. And I do that, and I train in that. It's very peaceful in itself. It's a very nice thing to do. But then, when something complex comes up, some human problems in the monastery, which never happened, of course, and I'm starting to get uptight, oh, uptight feels this way. I come back to that reference point because I've actually investigated. And I understand that not as a kind of Buddhist theory, but existentially understand how to just be with the way things are. So I'm getting upset about something. Oh, yeah, upsetness feels this way. You know, it's the way I always talk. And it's very effective because I'm not denying the problem that in the monastery say or my own reaction to it, but I'm learning how not to be preoccupied in a negative way, in an unskillful way, with these habits of mind. And you can see that's a training. It's not a belief. You believe it or don't believe it, right? But, it's more like, how do I do that? So it's got to make sense. For me, it's informed by my aspiration to the Buddha's words around enlightenment. Because that's why I signed up. I didn't sign up to be a monk. I didn't sign up to be a good monk or a bad monk. I hope I'm doing all right. Kind of probably all right. But that's not where I signed up, to be a good boy or to join the club or to be a card-carrying Buddhist even. Buddhism is best. And knock on the doors and convert. Glad we don't have to do that. But rather, I saw this is a vehicle. The Buddha says, try it this way. This does work. I said, okay. But it's informed by this aspiration to a spiritual insight, isn't it? So non-desire is actually really, really quite difficult. So that's what I suggest, maybe, like, two things, three things, four things, five. Like, during this retreat, can you take that exercise? First of all, make the intention to really make the strong intention just to know the way things are. So presence, present moment awareness. Make that a strong intention. You'll do it for 5 minutes or 3 minutes, whatever. But make that a strong, clear intention, which isn't to demand that you're always present, but that's what I'd like to do during this retreat, be present to the way things are. And then, with that as a background, when your mind goes into narratives of past and future, storylines, be they pleasant or unpleasant, when you awaken to that, don't try to get rid of them, but see if you can just go to another object. So, like, what was I doing at the monastery? I was doing pine needles. So I'd be walking from the monk's vihara to the meditation room, and I'd say, I think I'll just do pine needles today. So I just use the pattern of pine needles as focus. And I didn't run into a wall. But as a present, it's actually very peaceful. But I'm not forcing my mind, now you must not think of your Dhammo, you must do pine needles. This is the path to enlightenment. But rather, I was just choosing to pay attention on something and then holding that attention for spans of time. Yeah? Now we can all do that. And if you do it with that sense of awakening to the narratives, to the self-making, I-making, my-making thoughts, without rejecting them, but choosing, no, I'll do this other thing. I'll do this other thing. I'll do this other thing. That calms the mind. Just reacting to thoughts, I have to try harder. Oh, why am I thinking so much? That doesn't work because it's aversion. This isn't aversion. It's simply direction, direction a different way. And, you know, and the training, say, in monasticism and in Buddhism in general, is very kind of ordinary. Very ordinary thing, right? Maybe it's not so ordinary to look at pine. But I'm looking now not because I'm fascinated by the pine, you know, and I'm going to do photography and I'm going to paint it. No, I'm just because it's pretty neutral. And it just seems, yeah, okay. Seems like a good object there. It might be sound, it might be temperature, whatever. So then the emphasis is really not on the pine needles, but it's rather on awareness itself. That's why I'm using it, right? So how can we train ourselves to emphasize awareness? Let's say something on the retreat annoys you. I'm sure it won't. But don't tell me, tell Jane. Thanks a lot. You know, like the person who takes the shower at 3 a.m. They're always very well loved, especially if you're in the next room. And then someone needs a shower at 3 a.m. And then, you know, they do it the next day, and you start to anticipate it. And then you notice who the person is. They're over there, and that's the shower. And your mind starts to pick up, be preoccupied with some negative sign, right? And notice how annoyance works. You get something about someone's behavior, which is not immoral. It's just, you know, the way you're conditioned, they're conditioned. And you just start to pick up on it. And then you feel guilty. Oh, I shouldn't, you know, may they be well, may they be well, may they drop dead. But all the time you're preoccupied. You're preoccupied with this object of annoyance. So if you, we use the word letting go or non-grasping, and that's a difficult, for many people find that, somehow get confused by that, but I think not being preoccupied with something is kind of easier. Just don't be preoccupied with it. I shouldn't be that. No. They shouldn't. No. And so you notice that, and then you can shift your attention. Oh, there's this other thing going on. There's that going on. So you begin to have some facility of directing attention, holding an object, but not from desire, from wisdom and from understanding, non-desire. So during the sitting meditations, if you could just introduce that word into your sitting practice, non-desire. See what that does. Which is different than an imperative, I must not desire. It's not an ego thing, it's a mirror of attitude. It's an attitudinal mirror, is that such a word? It's a mirror which shows you your attitude of desire. Yeah? Oh, non-desire, what does non-desire feel like? And you can't find that, you can only be that. I must find the feeling of non-desire. It doesn't compute, doesn't work. Okay, stretch your legs a bit and we'll do some sitting.